Can everybody hear me okay? All right, a lot of times my voice doesn't carry. I leaned over to my wife and I said, oh, it looks like we don't have sound. And she said, good, they don't have to listen to you. So I drove along with my daughter last week. We played the video, I think you guys played it last week as well, the video from Mr. Myers. And so we walk in, my daughter doesn't know this. And so the video plays and we watch it. And then afterwards she goes, Daddy, I was so excited when I saw the video because I didn't have to listen to my daddy.
That's good.
Thank you. I love you too. Love you very, very much. Now, good afternoon, everyone. I feel it's very good to be here. I appreciate the time to be able to speak and be able to come here. I think we've been here. I've been here, I think, one other time. I think my family has been here more times than that, but I've been here once. So I do appreciate the opportunity to speak. A lot of our trips, we take trips solemnly, like everybody does, but a lot of our trips surround nature, surround wildlife. That tends to be the reason we go and do whatever we're doing. If we're traveling to a place, it's to see wildlife, or to go hiking, that kind of thing. We enjoy being out in nature, and I can't actually think of a much better way to spend time than to spend time with my family out in God's creation. I can't think of a better way to spend my time. I absolutely love that. I got my degree, a little bit of a background. I got my degree in natural resources and wildlife technology. It's kind of a long degree title, but natural resources and wildlife technology. I ended up working for the state of Maryland as a trail specialist. And I remember the first time hearing that, I thought, that's a job? A trail specialist? Yep, it's a job. And I actually got to do it for about 4 years. I remember the first day on the job, had my backpack and everything, went in to meet my boss. Which later became just a wonderful boss, but I didn't know her all that well at the time. I went in there and said, okay, what do you want me to do? And she looked up from the computer and said, get lost. So I did. For 8 hours a day, every day, that's basically what I got paid to do, was get lost. And I loved that. It was part of my job to go get lost in the woods. So for about 8 hours a day, I got to do that in the Appalachian Mountains of Garrett County. It's just absolutely beautiful. Loved it. Then along with that, I got hired probably about a year after that, I got hired to be a naturalist for two straight state parks that were fairly close. They're about 5 miles apart. But for both of those, I got to be a naturalist. And then there was a large state forest in between that. And then for the county, they had different state forests that I was over as well. So it was really, really great. So for about 40 hours a week, I was going to say 40 hours a day. That didn't exist. But 40 hours a week, I got to hike and play with wildlife. So that was what I did. I got to work in education, conservation, and then I got to be by myself out in the middle of the woods. I didn't even have a cell phone. I didn't take a radio, which I got in trouble a lot for not doing that, but I loved it because I was out. I was out. Nobody could get a hold of me if they wanted to. But where my love for the outdoors came from is I grew up with a father that absolutely loved nature. That's where it came from. That's where I got to see it. And he loved reptiles, and in particular, he loved snakes. That was his big love. Absolutely loved snakes. He would catch whatever he could just to be able to show his family. He didn't have an actual education in it, but he learned a lot just being out in nature and with any kind of the snakes that he was able to catch. And I remember him catching anything from garter snakes, which I don't like, and to copperheads to rattlesnakes. He caught all of those just to be able to show us what they were like, and we got to touch them and all that kind of stuff. And he had this way about him that he could actually calm them down. Remember, we were in, believe it or not, Oregon has a desert, and it's a high prairie desert, and there was a prairie rattlesnake. They're small. I remember him catching it. And at first, it's all very, very aggressive, but he had this way about him just to be able to calm down the rattlesnake, and pretty soon he would just let it go, and then he would just show people. He was very good at it. And that's where I learned so much about my love of the outdoors. Now, this time, going back to Maryland as a naturalist, I had a job where I got paid to do the exact same thing. I got paid to show people wildlife. I get paid to do what my father did, but I get to do it with people in parks. That's part of my job. I get to teach people about all kinds of wildlife, but nothing caught the attention. Nothing caught the attention and the interest of the people like snakes do. You can be so afraid of snakes, and people come. You can teach people, and they almost just like, they want to look through their fingers. They're terrified of these snakes, but they want to learn about them. And they would draw on the people. It was wonderful. But there's a problem. There is a major, major problem. I had a fear of snakes. I couldn't stand them. I didn't like to be around them. I was afraid of them. Like the other people that are afraid of them, you know, I wanted to be around them, I was interested in them, but I was afraid of them. Didn't want to touch them. As I said before, and I've said many times before, Jen and I feel that words are very powerful. Words are very strong. Very strong. We want our yes to be yes. We want our no to be no. One of the most powerful words that we don't use unless we absolutely mean it is hate. And I hated being afraid. Absolutely hated being afraid. Can't stand being afraid. I didn't hate snakes, but I hated the fear of snakes. I didn't like that at all. See, fear has the ability to consume you. It's a strong point. Fear has the ability to consume you. I had the same thing with heights. I couldn't stand heights. I was so afraid of it. My whole family loved snakes, or loved heights. I was afraid of them. I had a fear of heights. See, fear limits what you can do and will do. It limits you and what your abilities are. It will limit what you can accomplish. That's so strong. It has power. It will limit what you can accomplish. There's a roadblock to progress that I'd like to speak about today. Actually, that's my title to the message, is a roadblock to progress. There are a lot more than just one roadblock to progress, which would be great. You just have one roadblock, that's it, you overcome it, life would be easy. That would be wonderful. That's not the case. But there is a roadblock in life that I have seen, that I have experienced, that inhibits people greatly. I've seen it do complete damage. It's a strong thing. The roadblock that we need to rise above. Fear is that roadblock. I'd like to turn to scripture that you wouldn't normally turn to at the beginning of a message. This isn't normally what you turn to and say, okay, this is at the start of the message. It's usually something you close with. But I'd like to go back to Revelation 21. Revelation 21. Powerful set of scriptures here. Revelation 21. Starting in verse 7. Revelation 21 and verse 7. Now listen to these words and what it means to us. He who overcomes shall inherit all things. Capital A-L-L. Shall inherit all things. And I will be his God, and he shall be my son. What an outstanding scripture. He who overcomes inherits all things. I love that. That's a beautiful scripture. God is opening up his eternal plan to those who overcome. To those who overcome this world, where we're standing now. Not always the most beautiful world. More often than not, it is a very ugly world that we have to overcome. See, the greatest battle ever fought, where kingdoms fell, where rulers were dethroned, it was done with words. The most powerful war that was ever fought. Today, we love to use the word epic. We use it all the time when we're talking about sporting events. When we're talking about movies, we overuse it. We misuse it. But this was truly an epic battle. The most epic battle ever fought. Had more significance than any other battle. Billions upon billions of lives, tens of billions of lives were at stake. If one side lost, billions upon billions would have died. One side won, billions upon billions would be saved. This was the battle between Jesus Christ and the ruler of this world, Satan. It's an astonishing, astonishing battle. Jesus Christ was victorious, as we know. We oftentimes read those scriptures around the time of atonement. We look at those. We know this battle. He would later tell his disciples not long before his death to be of good cheer. I have overcome this world. That was the battle. He won. He overcame the world. And now he sits at the right hand of God. And here, God is saying the same thing to his people. It's exactly the message to us. Where we are now, everyone sitting in this room, it was our message that he was giving us. That he who overcomes shall inherit all things. What he's saying is the battle is now ours. It's our battle. Put onto our plate, on our shoulders. Then he goes on to say, I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Very powerful. There are many themes that run throughout the Bible, but there is one very strong theme that we see often. I actually talked about it not that long ago, from the beginning of the book to the end, where he says, I will be their God, and they will be my people. Runs throughout. You find it all over the place in the Bible. Why? Because it's God's design. It's a strong desire. He wanted family. He wants family. To those who overcome, this is what they inherit. All things. Being a part of that family. Very strong. We have a hard time comprehending the magnitude of this. And I will actually say, I have a very difficult time understanding the magnitude of it because it's so big, so large. How could we mess this up? We have this ability to be able to have that, to be in the family of God. We have that. He shows it. He says, the battle is now yours, but how could we possibly mess that up? Read verse 8. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. You could break each one of these offenses down and make messages out of them. But the one that was eye-opening to me is the first one mentioned. Cowardly. Cowardly. The King James Version has fearful. The fearful. The Greek word used here, I looked up, says timid or fearful. But specifically referencing Christians. So when we're talking about it here, it's specifically talking about a group of people. Specifically referencing Christians who through cowardice give way under persecutions and apostatize. Meaning they let go. They let go of God's way of life. Meaning by fear, they let go of the right way to live. They walked away from it. Fear has that power. Fear is a big deal to God. I'm not saying that fear of snakes or anything like that will necessarily keep you out of the kingdom. It's not my point of this message. But rather that God takes fear extremely seriously. It's a big topic with Him. Why? Because fear diminishes our belief. It diminishes our belief that God will do what He says. That's strong. If that can be taken from us, that's powerful. It diminishes our belief in what God says He will accomplish through us. Fear has that kind of power. Power to weaken. Power to destroy. And has power to take an inheritance. Have you ever thought about that? Fear has the ability to take your inheritance. It's a scary thing. Let's read about this in action. Let's go to Numbers 13. Numbers 13. Back to the Old Testament. Numbers 13, here we have the story of the spies being sent into Canaan to spy out the land. And as we read through this, we will see 8 destructive things fear has the power to do. We're not going to spend a long time on each one of these, but we're just going to witness them. We're going to see them. 8 destructive things that fear has the ability to do. We're going to look at these. Verse 1. Again, it's Numbers 13 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I have given to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, everyone a leader. There's a strong word there, a leader among them. God was giving this land to Israel, giving it to them. It was theirs. God wasn't saying, see this land? This is the land I want you to have. I want you to have this land. I hope you can overtake it. It's yours if you can take it from these nations. God wasn't saying that at all. When God was saying that, when He said, I am giving this land to Israel, He's saying, I am the Lord of Lords, the creator of the universe, the creator of the earth, everything small and great. I am God. Powerful. I created everything. I am with you. This land is, again, capital I and an S, is yours. It's yours. And He sent out leaders. They were leaders of all the tribes. People looked up to these men. They were leaders. Verse 3. So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord. All of them men who were heads of the children of Israel, leaders among them. They know to do this. They know to be strong. Verse 17. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up this way into the south and go up to the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are they camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, or whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. Something important to note is spying out the land for the people. It wasn't for God. God knows exactly what was there. God knows everything that's going on. He knows the people that's there. It wasn't for him. It was for the people. It was for the people to see. It was a test. It was a test. God wanted to see their faith, and he wanted to see their strength. Who are they going to rely upon? Who are they going to rely upon? Then he says, be of good courage. It's actually a very strong statement. Be of good courage. Courage is strength in God, even when we don't know what is in front of us. I'm guessing everybody in this room has had a time in their lives we have no idea what's in front of us. Time is hard. Maybe there's trials that happen. You don't know how things are going to end up. Where we put our faith? God. These spies were to have good courage. And not just courage in and of itself. Good courage. In Brown, Rivers, and Briggs, the Hebrew and English lexicon says, the word courage is talking about being where you are now, or growing firm, strong, to strengthen. They were to be a people who were courageous, but not only courageous. Throughout their life, they were to be growing in courage, never stopping. God's people are the same way. What we're supposed to be doing as well. Always growing in that courage. Verse 26. We're going to drop down a little bit. They've already spied out the land. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran, in Kadesh. They brought back word to them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And here, listen to what they say. Verse 27. Then they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. They got to see the fruit of the land. And they said, it's exactly as God told us. God was right. This land, the perfect land. You think about the statement of milk and honey, what that means for a land. That means it's a proper land to be able to have crops. It's a beautiful land. It has flowers and trees and all the stuff that bees do that we've learned so much about even now what bees do. What that's saying is this is a great land. It can support the nation. It's a great land where you can grow cattle and goats to be able to have that milk. It was showing a picture that this was a beautiful land that you can build a nation. And God is saying, that's where I'm planting you. And they were saying, yeah, it is exactly as God said. He was right. God was right. And then we come to verse 28. Nevertheless, there's that word. Nevertheless. Always sneaks in there. There's that doubt. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land, again, 28, are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. We saw Anak there. What are we going to do? Verse 29. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. Number one, the first thing that we see fear do. Fear limits what God can do in your mind. The people of Anak were there. We can't overtake this land. Number one is fear limits what God can do in your mind. How powerful it is. It breaks down faith. What the spies were saying is there was a problem with what God was saying. It's a good land, but he didn't give us all the details. There's something wrong with what God told us. We're not strong enough to overtake this land. God does not have the strength to help us, is what it's saying. God can't do it. It diminishes what we think God can do. Verse 30 is where we find the next one. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses, that's key right there, and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. See, this gives us a little bit of an insight to fear. Not necessarily to what Caleb said, it's what he had to do to the crowd. Number two, is fear is contagious. Your fear will spread. Fear spreads. You can give it to someone easier than you can get a sickness. You get a crowd, and the leader leaders of the people become afraid. What happens to the people? It spreads to them as well. Verse 31. But the men who had gone up with him said, We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. We can't do this. Verse 32. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which you have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. It's a mean land. And all the people who saw it in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. Kind of gives you an idea how they picture themselves against this challenge. They saw themselves a certain size. And then they said the giants saw us in a certain size. Number three. This fear makes the problem bigger. Fear makes the problem bigger. It will always make the problem bigger. Whatever the issues are in our lives, fear will make it bigger. And all of us have problems. All of us have trials that we go through. And if we attack it with fear, it's just going to grow. It's going to become bigger. It tells us that there are problems out there that are just, you know what? They're just too big for God. They're just too big. Chapter 14 and verse 1. Chapter 14 and verse 1. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. Who were they listening to? They were listening to the 10 rather than the 2. Verse 2. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and the children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Number four, fear clouds our vision. Fear clouds our vision. It tells us it would be better to be a slave than to trust in God. It's not a good thing. It tells us that sometimes it's better to go back from what you've been delivered from. It's better to go back. Not a good thing. It tells us that it's easier to live by the way of the world than it is to live by the way of God. All the blessings that we even talked about in the sermonette, all those blessings, pushing it aside, it's easier to go back. Verse 4. One long verse and we get the next point. So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. Number 5. Fear leads to taking the problem out of God's hand and putting it into yours. Fear leads to taking the problem out of God's hand and putting it into yours. I've heard a saying, I imagine you have too. I've seen it quite a bit on Facebook. It's been around several times. I imagine you have heard this. But it says, if God is your co-pilot, switch seats. We don't want to be the pilot to our own problems. We want God directing that. We want God helping us, working through it. Again, fear leads to taking the problem out of God's hand and putting it into ours. Verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, to Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. It's a blessed land. I love their attitude here. In verse 9, only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Their words give us a little bit of an insight. The people were doing exactly opposite of what Joshua and Caleb were pleading. That's why they were saying these things. Number 6 is fear leads to disbelieving God, and that sometimes he can't do what he says. Fear leads to disbelieving God, and that sometimes he can't do what he says. So you have the people that live by faith, that God can do everything that he says. And you have more of an atheistic type of approach, that God can't do anything, he's not even real. But what's just as dangerous as that is not knowing if God can do what he says. Sometimes he can, sometimes he can't. It's a dangerous place to be. That's where they were finding themselves. Fear is a faith destroyer. We can't live there. That can't be where we find ourselves. Is disbelieving that God, you know, can't do what he says he can do. Verse 10. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. Something there. How bad did it have to be? They were ready to stone them. And God said, okay, enough is enough. I have to go down there now. How bad it was getting. They were going to stone their countrymen. Verse 11. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject you, Moses? No, it's not what he said. How long will these people reject me? How long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? Number 7. Fear leads to rejecting God. Fear leads to rejecting God. Not Moses, not Aaron, not Joshua, not Caleb. Fear leads to rejecting God. God was hearing this. God is saying, how long will they reject me? The Israelites let fear override everything they saw God do for them. Everything they saw him do. Not even 2 years at this point, they got to witness the miraculous exodus out of Egypt. Everything that happened, not even just 2 years from this point. They saw the 10 plagues that man couldn't duplicate. Now, they said, wait a second, there was a couple. No, they had their tricks that mimicked it. But it never mimics the power of God. They couldn't duplicate any of them. God's power is very different. The destruction of the most powerful army at that time. There wasn't an army out there that could come close to the power of Egypt. And God wiped them out. God destroyed them at that time. The crossing of a sea, one miracle. On dry land, two miracles. He parted the sea, and then he dried it so they could actually walk on it. That was two miracles at the same time. And you got to remember what they were doing. They were feeling these things. You're feeling the mist of the water. You're seeing the power of all that's happening. You're walking on the dry land. It's doing something to your heart and to your mind. It's making an impression, or should it? Should have been something that was written there for good, for the rest of their lives. But 2 years later, it's erased. It's gone. They got to see manna from the sky, water from rock, etc., etc. All of those miracles they got to see. They got to witness God doing it. But in their minds, God could not give them this land. It's impossible. There were giants there. They couldn't do it. Again, fear has the power. The power that we don't want. Fear has one more thing that it can do, and it's this aspect that I find is the most frightening. It's the most scary. I think it's the biggest of them all. And fear has the power to do this. Verse 12. I will strike them with pestilence and disinherit them. And I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. Number 8. Fear can take away our inheritance. Fear can take away our inheritance. It takes us right back to what we read at the first place, Revelation 21, verses 7 and 8. See, the story remains the same. In the book of Numbers was a physical inheritance. When God is speaking to us, in the book of Revelation, it is a spiritual one. Physical versus spiritual, but the story remains the same. Our inheritance is still on the line. Fear being allowed to be planted and grow chips away faith and strength in God. To me, that is frightening. That is a scary thing. Let's take a look again at what fear does. I'm going to go through each of those points, but I'd also like to put down there the opposite of what courage does. We're going to look at the opposite, what I feel Joshua and Caleb were doing. See, fear limits what God can do in your mind. That was the first one we mentioned. Versus courage puts no limit on God. No limit on God. God can do all things. That's where we find ourselves. Second one was fear is contagious versus courage is unwavering. Where was Joshua and Caleb standing? They weren't wavering at all. God said to do something, they were to do it. They were unwavering. The next one is fear makes the problem bigger. Versus courage sees the problem through God's eyes. Everything shrinks down to size. There's no problem too big then. Courage sees the problem through God's eyes. Fear clouds your vision. Versus courage helps you see what God can and will do. You start seeing very clear. Very clear. Courage helps you see what God can and will do. Fear leads to taking the problem out of God's hand and putting it into yours. Versus courage places all of life's issues in God's control. He's a pilot. What do we want him? Next one. Fear leads to disbelieving God. And that sometimes he can't do what he says. Versus courage builds our faith in God. And that God knows what he's doing. God knows what he's doing. He sees what's in front of us. We don't. But our faith is in that. We're ready to follow him. Next one is fear leads to rejecting God. Versus courage puts God first in your life. Courage puts God first in your life. The last one, fear can take away our inheritance. Versus courage builds our relationship with God as future sons and daughters in his kingdom. Now, I see a lot of you writing furiously. I should have told you you don't have to. Another way to say this, I put it all into one saying and make sense of it, is fear makes the possible impossible. Courage makes the impossible possible. Fear makes the possible impossible. Courage makes the impossible possible. That's what our courage does. That's what it gives us. Kind of a big topic. Does it apply? Does it apply to us? Does it apply to Christianity? Absolutely. Absolutely it does. Again, God takes the topic of fear very seriously because it inhibits what he can do in our lives. We don't want that. We don't want him slowed down at all in our lives. In life, we will face many challenges. I guarantee you, all of us have had many challenges. Sometimes they feel so big, so powerful to just absolutely destroy us, to wreck our lives. We will face many giants in our lives. I guarantee you that. I guarantee you, I will face many giants in my life. It gives us the opportunity to have fear or to have courage. Every time we choose fear, it gets easier to choose it again. It's that much easier to choose fear. Every time we choose courage, it gives us strength to do it again, to be able to battle the next giant. And that happens. Fear tears down. Courage builds up. That's the promise. That's what it does. God gives a very strong command on a physical level to the people of Israel. We know it on a spiritual level to his people now. It is a command that fear should never rule our lives because of one beautiful promise. Actually, I'd say there's many beautiful promises in there. But one I'd like to turn to. Let's go to Deuteronomy 31. A beautiful promise. And it is directly to you and to me. Deuteronomy 31. In verse 1, Deuteronomy 31, verse 1, then Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in, meaning I can no longer lead the people. I can no longer do this job. I am at the end of my life. I can't do that any longer. Also, the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross over this Jordan. So right before that time, when they're going into the Jordan. Verse 3, the Lord your God himself crosses over before you. Remember that statement. He will destroy these nations from before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Lord has said. I don't know a more important statement to understand than this one. The many times we find ourselves crossing over into fearful areas when we've had trials, hardships, challenges in our lives of all types, small and great. God is the one that goes before us. It's going to be more important as we're going through this message to acknowledge that, to know that, that God is the one that goes before you, that God is behind you, it's not what you want. You want God to be leading the charge. Look at the next thing that he says. He says, he will destroy these nations, not you. He will destroy these nations. We have our part to play, again, as we heard in the sermonette. We have our responsibility in our battles. We have our faith to build. But if we allow, God will overcome those battles. That's the promise. It's the promise then, it was the promise now. God will overcome those battles. We want to place it into his hands. Verse 4. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites in their land, when he destroyed them. The Lord will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you. In verse 6, be strong. There's that command again. Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you, nor forsake you. There's not a challenge or trial that we can't overcome because of the one that goes before us. There isn't. It's a promise. Now the words fear and afraid here in this verse have a little bit more to do with reverence or awe. God is saying for Israel to not want to be like the other nations. Don't follow them. Don't look at them and say, that's how I want to do it. That's the fear and the awe that he's talking about. In other words, he's saying, fear me. Put your trust in me. You think about it, that is true courage. To put your full trust in God. Also, something else to note is courage, and this is something extremely important to know, is courage is not the complete lack of fear. That's not what courage is. Courage is not the complete lack of fear. However, it is the complete lack of being cowardly. Now we're starting to define a little bit cowardly versus fear. It's a little bit different. It's a lot different. Listen to the meaning of courage from Merriam-Webster's dictionary. Says the ability to conquer fear or despair. The ability to conquer fear or despair, simply meaning to rise above or to overcome fear. An aspect of fear can still be there, but it doesn't drive your life. It doesn't show you where to go. It doesn't control you. You've overcome it. It might still be there. That's courage. Now listen to the meaning of coward. One who lacks courage or shows shameful fear or timidity. Doesn't say someone who has fear, but one who shows shameful fear. Here's a good illustration of this. I got this off of familytimes.net. It's about a man that I think a lot of us reading history books going back to World War II would put up there as a man of bravery. A lot of people do a lot of the things that he was able to do. He's talking about General George S. Patton. That many efforts in World War II that I think have been listed as heroic. It's part of his story that I find interesting on this topic. It says, during World War II, a military governor met with General George Patton in Sicily. When he praised Patton highly for his courage and bravery, the general replied, "Sir, I am not a brave man. The truth is, I am a coward. I've never been within the sound of a gunshot or in the sight of battle in my whole life that I wasn't so scared that I had sweat in the palms of my hands." Years later, when Patton's autobiography was published, it contained a significant statement by the general. "I learned very early in my life never to let my fears take control of me." This is courage in action. That is what courage is. Fear was there no matter what he said. He called himself a coward. He wasn't a coward. He had fear. He overcame that fear. He was able to do the job that he needed to do. There was no cowardice there. Cowardice is in giving in to that fear. Courage is overcoming that fear. But what we have is a spiritual help in these situations that's much, much bigger to help us grow in spiritual courage where we want to be. I'd like to turn our attention now. How do we overcome our fears? We've looked at what fear is. We've defined fear. How do we overcome it? I'd like to look at three things that we can use to build courage and overcome our fears. Three things that we can use in our spiritual lives. Three things that we should use often to be able to overcome our fears. Again, it doesn't matter how big or how small. turn our story now over to another great giant. Let's go to 1 Samuel. A lot of times we look at these as children's stories. They're not children's stories. They're our stories. They were meant for us. Things that we should visit often. They're powerful stories for our lives. So we have here the battle, a battle between the Philistines and the Israelites. King Saul, the first king of Israel, is there. You have the Philistines on one side, and you have the Israelites on the other. And who do you have in the middle? You have that big giant in the middle, taunting the people of Israel. Come fight me. He's defying them. He's defying God. He's doing everything that he shouldn't. And his name was Goliath. Break into the story in verse 8. Verse 8, then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel, this is Goliath, and said to them, why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Meaning, hey, we're at war here. Come battle me. He's taunting them. Am I not a Philistine? Lost my place. And you, the servants of Saul, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. How much doubt does he have in his mind that he's going to win? He's a giant. He's lived by his strength. Nothing has ever been too hard for him in that way. There's no doubt at all. He's taunting them. Verse 11. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. I skip verse 10. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. So we're going to skip ahead a little bit. We have another person that comes on the scene, a youth. Somebody young, a shepherd boy that's out in the field. He's not even old enough to be out at war. And his father calls him in, this is David, calls him in to send out provisions to the armies. And what that means, they would have, he gives them cheeses and all of this type of stuff to take out. That's how you fed the armies at that time. It's not set up like it is now. The people of the land would send provisions to the army to be able to feed them. And in this case, he wanted to send stuff to his sons as well as to the army itself. And this was Jesse to his son. So David goes and does this. Let's pick this up in verse 22. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper and ran to the army and came and greeted his brothers. He wanted to see his brothers. Then he talked with them. And there was a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words. So David heard them. And I love what plays out. You can almost hear it in what's going on in David's mind. Verse 24. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him. And were dreadfully afraid of another giant. Verse 25. So the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. Of course, it's what he's saying. That's exactly what he's doing. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. This would have been a great blessing to be able to do it. And there still wasn't a man that was willing to go out there. Wasn't one to be found. Verse 26. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? It took a youth to have the right mindset going into this. I believe you can hear the tone and the confusion in David's words. What do you mean? He doesn't understand what's going on. See, David had courage from a very young age. And as we covered earlier, the courage properly puts the problem in God's control, puts it in God's hands. God is the one there. It's not an army. No one else saw that. God would have gone before them if they put it into God's hands. Verse 31. Drop down to verse 31. Now in the words which David spoke, because he wanted to go out and fight, he said, I will fight this man. Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Verse 33. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, And he is a man of war from his youth. Not only big, he's a warrior. He's trained. He's trained to fight. He's ready to fight. And you are just small. You're a shepherd boy. This is where we get point number one for how we overcome our fears. Point number one is prepare for your battle. Prepare for your battle. See, looks can be deceiving. What Saul and the other men saw were very different. It was very different than what God saw. God saw something extraordinary, wonderful. David was not prepared for physical war. He wasn't prepared for this war. But he was prepared for battle. Two different things. Preparation for this battle between David and Goliath happened long before David ever stepped foot on the battlefield. It was happening all along. Go to Psalm 71. What I'd like to do with these 3 points is read the story, and then I'd like to go to other parts of David's words where he's speaking to be able to see what's going through his mind at these points. Psalm 71 and verse 5. For you, talking about God, for you are my hope, O Lord God. You are my trust from my youth. It started young. It didn't start it later. It started young. This was most likely one of David's psalms. And David built from a young age trust in God. It's a powerful thing. And David was building trust. It was preparing him for all kinds of future battles. He was ready for those battles because of who was with him. We are to prepare for tomorrow's battles today. That's what we are to be doing every day. Let's drop down to verse 17. Psalm 71 and verse 17. Oh God, you have taught me from my youth. His ears were open, ready to be taught. And he was being taught by who? God. And to this day I declare your wondrous works. David was teachable. He was reachable and he was teachable. Those are extraordinary qualities of any kind of leader, is to be reachable and teachable all of their life. David was teachable. The more we learn from God, the more prepared we will be. I'd like to go to an easy analogy. Let's go ahead and turn over to Ephesians. It does fit. It's one that we turn to often. It's a very common scripture. But I want our minds to be going through what we're reading. What David was doing. This is talking about spiritual battle. Believe it or not, I believe David was also in a physical and spiritual battle at this time. This is our battles. This is what we will be doing. Ephesians 6. Think about what David was doing all along throughout his life. Ephesians 6 and verse 13. We're just going to read through them. We're not going to break these apart. But just put it into our mind. Ephesians 6 and verse 13. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God. He's getting ready for war. He's getting ready for battle. That you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, meaning we have our part to play, we have our responsibility. Verse 14, stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, above all taking the shield of faith, with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. And I love verse 18 because it caps everything off perfectly of what we are to be doing. Verse 18, praying always. That's a daily thing, multiple times a day, that we need to be doing to prepare for war. Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit. Being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints. This would have been the armor David would be putting on before ever stepping foot on the battlefield. He was already suited up when this battle came. Already suited up. You would never want to get dressed, or you would never want to get dressed for war. Stand out in the battlefield and lean to the guy next to you and say, how do you use this stuff? How does this fit? How do you put this on? It's not how we approach battle. We're suited up, we're ready. We know this stuff. We want to be prepared for war. The time preparing is and should be by far more time than when we're at war. That's not the time to prepare. When war comes, we already need to be prepared, ready for it. The physical soldier knows their equipment very, very well, and they are trained in how to use it over and over and over again. They know their equipment. They know how to use it. How much more important is it for us to be training every single day with the armor that God has given us? It's extremely, even more important than that. Extremely important. We should be suiting up every single day. Actually, I'll change that. We should stay suited up every single day. This armor doesn't come off. We don't want it to come off. It stays with us. Always. This is what I believe David was doing before ever stepping foot on the battlefield. Again, we are to be preparing for battle before that battle ever comes. Go ahead and go back to our story. 1 Samuel. And see what else we need to do to be able to overcome our fears. 1 Samuel 17. Starting picking up now in verse 34. 1 Samuel 17 and verse 34. But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose again against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine," I love the mindset that David has. I love that. "This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Something I love is he always brings it back to God. The battle is God's. It wasn't David's. The second thing that we can learn from David on how to overcome our fear and build courage is focus on victories. Focus on victories. In verse 37, David provided such an important thing to overcoming fear. Go ahead and read that. Moreover, David said, "The Lord has delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear. He will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." See, he kept the victories close to him. He remembered them. They played in his mind. He remembered what God did in his life. He kept track of what God has done for him. The problem with God, or the problem with people, not the problem with God, the problem with people, the problem with Tad, is we forget. We're very forgetful. We can't remember all the things God did for us. We kind of place them out. What are all those miracles? What are all the things that happened? We kind of forget them. Push them aside. That's how God can deliver Israel from the most powerful army of that time. The most powerful army. Egypt. Only for them to think God couldn't deliver them from inferior ones. Just 2 years later, they were people. They forgot. They didn't talk about it. They didn't refresh everybody's mind what God did for them. They didn't do that. Remembering what God has done for us reinforces what God will do for us. Not a might do for us. Will do for us. Turn over to 1 Chronicles 16. 1 Chronicles 16. Again, these are David's words. 1 Chronicles 16. The title above what I'm getting ready to read says, "David's Song of Thanksgiving." Kind of fitting for what we had in the past week. The David's Song of Thanksgiving to who? To God. 1 Chronicles 16, verse 8. "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, to the Eternal." He's giving it back to God. "Call upon His name. Make known His deeds among the peoples. Don't let us forget," in other words, don't forget what God has done. He's saying, don't let us forget. Verse 9. "Sing to Him. Sing songs to Him. Talk of all His wondrous works." Let's remind ourselves of what God has done in our lives, because it reinforces what He will do for us. It's what we should all be doing as a congregation, as brothers and sisters. Not saying that we don't. I think we do. We should do it more. Talking about God. Talking about the things that He's done in our lives. Sharing with one another, because our faith in God, that is also contagious and spreads. Verse 10. "Glory in His holy name. Let the hearts of those rejoice who seek the Lord. Seek the Lord in His strength. Seek His face evermore. Remember His marvelous works, which He has done. His wonders and the judgments of His mouth. Remember those things. Verse 13. O seed of Israel, His servant, you children of Jacob, His chosen ones. David's strength came from knowing what God did for him. He walked out on the battlefield knowing exactly what God did for him. Our strength will come from the same thing. We will overcome our fears when we remember the victories that God has had in our lives. We need to remind ourselves often. Again, like I said earlier, we need to talk about it often with one another. What better place is there to share it than here? We need to share these things. What David is talking about in his song is what we should be doing. Point number three, turning back to the story, 1 Samuel 17. 1 Samuel 17, I'm going to read a large part of the story. Again, 1 Samuel 17, we're going to drop down to verse 40. I love this part of the story. Everything that plays out, all the little details that they give us. Verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook. And he put them in the shepherd's bag, and a pouch which he had. And his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore a shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. Why? He's thinking, you have this whole army. This is who you bring me to fight. What were the reasons? Well, he was a youth. He was ruddy, and I don't know what this next part has to do with anything with warfare, but he was good looking. And I guess Goliath wasn't, and so that made him mad also. So ruddy and good looking, and he was a youth. So the Philistine, verse 43, said to David, Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds and the air and the beasts of the field. I don't care that you're a youth. I am going to slaughter you. I don't care. I don't care your age. I don't care anything about that. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord, his battle. The name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. You defied God. You didn't defy me. You didn't defy the armies. You defied God. He's putting it in the right place. Verse 46. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. In other words, my victory won't be mine. God is giving it to me. God is the one in control here. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and all beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, giving it back to God. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword or spear. He doesn't need to. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into his hands. Verse 48, so it was, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Now, there's a lot there. We're going to come back, we're going to visit a little bit. But there's neat little details there that shows you the battle was already done. Verse 49. Then David put his hand in the bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead, so that the stone sunk into his forehead and fell on his face to the earth. Verse 50. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. The third thing that we can learn from David and how we overcome fear and build courage is confidence in who goes before you. Confidence in who goes before you. David kept the stories of victory, point number two that we went over, close to him. And they proved to him, whether a lion or a giant, God went before him. It was God leading the charge. It wasn't David. He knew that deliverance was God. He knew that the sling was in God's hand. It wasn't in his. That's how David was able to say, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord. The part I absolutely love is when Goliath started to draw near to David. What was happening? Goliath was running towards David. What was David running towards? The army. Who was in the way? Goliath was just a formality. Goliath was just in his way. Victory was the war. He was already looking past Goliath because the victory was already won. Pretty strong. Verse 48 had a lot in it. Men saw a small young man and a giant. God saw a young man who put his trust in him. That's powerful. That's what God wants to see in all of us. David saw God who would give him strength and deliverance. How did he see God? He was the one leading the charge. He was the one in front. Let's go to Psalm 27. Psalm 27. Psalm 27. Psalm 27. In verse 1. And I love this depiction. I love what this pictures. Psalm 27 and verse 1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked came against me to eat up my flesh, my enemies and foes, they stumbled and fell. Though an army may encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war may rise against me, in this I will be confident. Again, that confidence was built long before the battlefield. He was already building that courage, that confidence. This is the same mindset that David had from the beginning. God was his deliverance and was the deliverance of Israel. Why? Because David approached everything with the confidence that God was the one that went before him. The most powerful tool that we have. As Romans 8:31 says, if God is for us, we can finish it. Who can be against us? Such a powerful statement. If God is for us, who can be against us? No one. There's no giant this world can conjure up and change that. There's not a giant out there. Whatever trial there is, whatever hardship, it doesn't exist that we can't overcome. The more we can remind ourselves of that, the more confidence we will have in God, the more courage will play a part in our lives. In closing, the subject of fear is a big deal. It's a really big deal. Again, the fear of snakes will not necessarily keep you out of the kingdom. So if you are afraid of snakes, I think you're still good. It's not going to keep you out of the kingdom. Unless somehow it makes you walk away from the truth. But I hate being afraid. That's something that bothers me. But quite frankly, I have to face my fears. I've given this story, I've talked about it before, and people walk away without actually giving any kind of story of how I overcame my fears. And so people are, well, how did you overcome them? Kind of a thing. So the thing that I did was the only thing I knew to do, which wasn't necessarily the correct thing. Was I went and caught snake after snake after snake. My heart pounding, I was absolutely terrified, but I did it. I got bit a lot. But it got easier. More time went on, it got easier. Now I absolutely love snakes. I enjoy them. I enjoy being around them. I have that same love. It's hard to have a favorite animal. I don't necessarily have a favorite animal, but I love snakes. I love being around them. With heights, I did the same thing, and I'm definitely not recommending doing what I did. I still have an injury that exists to this day because of it, but I did get over my fear of heights. I went cliff jumping. There were 100-foot cliffs in Oregon, and my friend that I was with said, no, that's crazy, I'm not doing that. And I did it, and he walked away not hurt, and I walked away hurt. So, but I did do it, and I went skydiving, and we did just different things that we could, and sure enough, I respect heights. But these are small, insignificant in comparison to what this message is about. Those are small fears. Those are fears that won't necessarily direct your lives. I do believe that overcoming our fears, no matter how small and how big, is very important in our Christian walk and how we live. That there's much better way to do it than the way that I did. The way that we do it is bringing God into that story, into our story. It's doing the three things that we can use to build courage and overcome our fears. And overcoming our fears is a battle. One, preparing for your battle. Two, focus on victories. And three, confidence in who goes before you. The more we do this with our small fears, the more we are preparing ourselves for the big ones. We should be doing it always, building them. It starts now. It doesn't matter if you're 12 years old. It doesn't matter if you've been baptized for the past 60 years. Today is the best day to grow even more in courage. Let us remember our courage in all that we do, because we know who goes before us.